This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Sharit Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. Today, in fact, is that the sugar tax is going to be implemented.
Yeah, it's a new legislation by the government. It will be imposed by the Customs Department. Yep. Get ready for price increases for your favourite soft drinks. Or you could just drink more water, which is what the government wants you to do anyway.
That's right. So it explains why, you know, 7-Eleven was selling out a lot of soft drinks in bundles. I was wondering why initially, before Raya and during Raya month, that they were, you know, trying to get rid of their soft drinks. So now I got reminded that on the 1st of July is when the sugar tax is going to kick
maybe,
in.
Maybe it's not that they're trying to get rid of them so much as people are stockpiling, you know, as if there it's kind of like getting ready for the apocalypse, you know. Got to make sure you've got enough.
You got to stock up the calories. That's right.
Now, in the meantime, though, we've got lots of fascinating conversations for you this morning. Actually, we're going to be talking about the sugar tax later on in the 7 o'clock hour. So be sure to stay tuned for that. If you miss it, you'll be able to catch it on the podcast on the morning brief later on today. But first up, what do we have on the agenda? On the agenda for this hour?
Well, Lynn and Xiaoning, your favorite topic. By the way, 64% of women are in the universities. There's more than men. Survey seems to be suggesting that companies with a larger rep of women in the board seems to be performing better than companies that don't. So, does it really? So, we'll talk about a Bloomberg article on this subject later.
And meanwhile, I'll be asking, do you think things are better than they were last year? Are you more optimistic about life? And if you're a business owner, are you prepared to pump more money into your business? Because guess what? Malaysia is an optimistic country.
Especially compared to our neighbours. Now, of course, if you want to weigh in on the conversations, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up first, though, we'll be talking about my favourite subject, which is coffee, and whether or not you should buy that morning cuppa. But first, here is Like Sugar by Chaka Khan. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Sharit and Xiaoning. Now, personal finance can be a bit of a question mark. You know, you get a lot of advice about it, and a lot of that advice can be divided into broadly two camps. So, actual advice and shaming people for spending. So, the New York Times takes this on with advice that boils down to basically just buy the coffee. And I am quite pleased by this because this validates my experience of buying a coffee every single day, which I know Xiaoning has a lot of opinions about.
And I might share her opinion today as well.
Really, Sharit?
Yeah.
I thought better of you.
Well, Lynn, coffee, it's definitely an essential today, right? I mean, we all don't function very well at this time of the morning without a cuppa, that's for sure. But there are ways around it. I always thought that the thing with coffee in Malaysia for me is that this seems still too pricey. It's not a, you know, dollar to dollar comparison. If you compare it with, you know, Western countries, which I think where this culture originally started.
It's true. I mean, this article highlights, of course, the famous Susie Orman, who says that you can pee literally $1 million your whole lifetime if you buy a coffee. And I calculated it, assuming like it's 10 ringgit a cup of latte, right? Mm-hmm. That's like 100,000 cups of coffee that, you know, you didn't need to consume. Okay, everyone knows in the office I'm cheap. I don't buy coffee. But it's a little bit due to the fact that I'm lazy. Yeah. And the fact that Nescafe is, you know, what I drink in office is perfectly fine for me. Right?
Yeah, I think so. Coffee here is really more of a placeholder than anything. For basically, it represents this kind of the small things in life that a lot of people are advised to cut down on when people first tell you to, okay, you need to save money. So it's not just coffee. It's things like holidays. It's things like that extra pair of shoes that maybe you needed to make yourself feel better. But I guess it's always just a bit of a trade off, right? How much will cutting down on these small things really contribute towards your savings in the end? Isn't it actually more like the big decisions that will really impact your personal balance sheet? Like, for example, do you move closer to work in order to save on commuting time, or do you stay in the place that you are and perhaps spend more time and money and stress on commuting? So those are the slightly more difficult decisions that people have to weigh, right?
I think at the end of the day, if you look at at it more objectively, it's a question of you also looking at your personal finances in a hard and actually objective way as to what are your financial goals? What are you actually hoping to save or buy? And then look at your own spending. And realistically, you can't have it all, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so for you, you weigh the things which are important to you. For Lindmark, it's that glass of that cup of latte at 9:30 after the show. For me, it could be, don't laugh, a lipstick, which is my favorite thing. So we all shouldn't deny ourselves the little things that make us happy. But at the same time, that shouldn't derail what is our primary financial objective, whether it is to buy that house or buy that car, go for further education, or even that very important dream holiday, your bucket list.
It's moderation, right, at the end of the day. Because I remember we've discussed on the Morning Run here before the FIRE movement, which is financial independence, retire early. And it's basically an extremely ascetic lifestyle with the goal of saving enough money that you can retire early. But a lot of people who've tried this FIRE movement found that they couldn't actually sustain it very well because it is to the other extreme, right? You don't spend on anything. You don't spend on fun things. And at the end of the day, they found that very difficult to keep to that lifestyle because you just get very tired and there's nothing in life to enjoy.
Absolutely. I mean, you do have to allocate some money that you have earned to sort of invest for yourself, right?
Yeah,
have some fun. I mean, what's the point of earning all those money? I was just speaking about football players over the weekend and how much money they earn. And apparently, they don't have any holidays. They basically work 7 days a week. When I say work, I mean they're out there working on the field. And with £100 a week, I mean, how much? What's the point, really?
£100,000 a week.
Sorry, £100 a week.
£100,000
is nothing. So for me, it's just a question of, as you mentioned, it's all about financial planning. If I'm the type that probably needs about two cups of coffee or, could be up as high as three, and if I were to translate that into Starbucks currency, that's going to cost quite a bit. But if you're just into one of those leisure cup coffee once a day, I don't think it's going to do any harm. But for example, 10 ringgit and 30 ringgit, that makes a lot of difference a day.
Yeah, don't feel guilty about these things. Think about it objectively.
Penny-wise, don't
beat yourself up about it. Look at your financial goals in a more strategic way and make a decision what you want to give up and what you don't. For me, instant coffee is fine.
Yeah, so I guess it is really just planning around your lifestyle and ensuring that when you do allocate a certain amount towards spending for fun, you do so in a moderate manner and taking into account still your long-term goals. Now, of course, if you're interested in learning more about personal finance, we do have a personal finance show here on The Morning Run, so be sure to tune in to Ringgit and Cents. That's every Thursday at 9:30 a.m. Now, we'll be back with more discussions for you about women on boards, so be sure to stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Sharitz and Shawning. That was Arcade Fire with Wake Up, and I certainly hope you are awake to listen to our fascinating discussions this morning. Now, right now, though, we're going to be talking about a study by International Finance Corp looking at companies in Asia and Southeast Asia, specifically those with more women on their boards. And they found, this study found that companies that showed more women on their boards generally delivered better financial results. Now, it showed that boards with more than 30% women representation saw an average return on assets of about 3.8% compared to their counterparts with less than 30% of women on the board. So they reported an average return on assets of about 2.4%. Looking at Asia and Southeast Asia, Thailand was the most diverse. They actually saw a percentage of 20%. So women held 20% of seats in listed companies in Thailand.
Yeah, so when I read this article, I do feel slightly relief in some ways, especially when I look at some of the composition of the board members that we have in some critical companies in Malaysia. For an example, PNB, right? The one that's responsible for ASB, ASN and all. We have Zeti, and that's good news, especially when this year's dividend wasn't that great, but hopefully, next year
we also have a woman in the Bank Negara, our governor. She's the second woman in a row.
But how do you calculate yield of Bank Negara? Don't get me wrong. It's not that I didn't think of our Bank Negara governor. It's just that I was thinking, does she has anything to do with how my dollar and cents work?
But she does. She's in charge of the monetary policy. Yeah, she's a very important lady.
Okay,
but
that's right.
I think in terms of listed companies, we still are lagging behind that 30% representation. Right, I think we're at something about just under 16% at the moment. Excuse us, that was a slight technical error. As we were saying, yeah, I think we're slightly at about just under 16% of women representation.
Actually, the exact number based on some data from the Straits Times is 13.8% women board members. It's above the Asian Pacific average, but below the global average.
What's the global average?
15%, according to this World Bank report.
I don't understand this, though. I mean, as far as my experience goes, I used to remember that there's definitely a lot more number of female students in universities. That's number one. So statistics seems to be proving that. They've got like 64%. And as I was growing up, a lot of the ladies are much more smarter than the boys. at least that's my personal experience. But again, as you grow up now, you don't see that same representation, right? You think that that's something that's going to be reflected, at least in the board. I've had the privilege at least be working with a big number of, you know, very intelligent women in my during my career. And again, it always these statistics baffles me. They surprise me very much.
Well, I think it's a combination of things, right? One of which is that, and the SC and Bursa are trying to do it, is to increase women participation on corporate boards. It's also how boards are often chosen. And I always feel it's a little bit like the old boys club.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Right.
So typically, in a large company with the boards, you would have accountant, retired accountant, retired lawyer, and usually they would choose their friends or business associates that the company has used in the past, which may be men. But I think that's changing because Malaysia is trying to be part of this 30% club.
Yeah, that was established in about 2015, I think.
Exactly. So we are aiming towards that, because if you look at other countries, like Norway has 40% women board representation, and we have a long way to go then.
I think also to your point, Sharit, that you see a lot of, you know, we have a lot of women in universities, but we're not seeing that reflected in the workforce. I think it is also because we still have a society that's very that still prescribes to a lot of traditional gender roles. So once women come out of university, a significant portion of them don't enter the workforce. Despite getting their degrees, a lot of them are under pressure to get married. And once you are married, the expectation is then that you will have children, and the women are expected to take care of those children. So I think the government is trying to address this in general, because, you know, it's implementing things like flexi hours so that women who have families can still manage those families as well as come to work with have a slightly more flexible work arrangement. But it's also a larger question of promoting gender equality, because once men once you know you if you encourage men to take up the mantle of taking care of their families, then it will even out.
Yeah, so I wonder if I don't think it's a society issue. It could be a generation issue. Generational, as in right now, those who are in the board are baby boomers during those times. Yeah, maybe it was as to how you would describe it, Lynn. But now I think once baby boomers pass, they give much more fair education, both men, boys and girls. And I think in the next generation, we could see some changes.
All right, and thanks. Let us know what you think about this. Do you agree with the idea that more women on boards delivers better results? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now we're coming up to the 6:30 news, and after that, more discussions for you. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Sharit Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning, and that was If You Want My Love by Cheap Trick. Now, we have another survey for you this morning. HSBC has looked at 200 Malaysian companies and found that 80% of them have a positive outlook going into this year. So that's interesting, considering it still seems like we're in a period of relative uncertainty regarding, you know, the government's fiscal abilities, and that, you know, FDI reports haven't been that great. But I thought what was interesting was some of the priorities espoused by these companies that were surveyed, which basically it seemed to imply that internet technology, IoT data, seem to be the things that companies are really most focusing on moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is the future. And there's always that question whether or not the companies in Malaysia are transforming fast enough. So there's definitely a lot of room to grow in that front. So this article does, gave me a bit of a surprise, especially considering that there's been a lot of talks, for example, all the the downside to kind of government. I mean, one of it being political uncertainty, whether or not, you know, that Anwar Ibrahim is going to be the new prime minister, and whether there's going to be a change of direction, or there's going to be, you know, we're dealing with an experienced government. But I guess all that is being offset by the fact that perhaps this new government are more accessible. I mean, they're more eager to sort of prove themselves in that sense. So perhaps there is a sense of ease of doing business. I mean, I'm just throwing possibilities of, you know, why this confidence are there, I guess.
But the other thing about surveys is that you always have to look, this is what period against what period, right?
Yeah.
So if you drill down and you look at the number, this is a one-year survey. So this is a comparison of how you felt in May 2018 versus how you feel in May 2019. So May 2019, how do you feel versus May 2018, right?
Mm.
And as we all remember, May 2018 was the change of government.
Yeah.
And I can imagine businesses at that time 1 year ago were probably a little bit nervous in terms of what to expect.
The baseline.
Right? Yeah, it's the base effect. You had 61 years of uninterrupted Barisan rule, right? You pretty much knew how to do business, what to expect in terms of bureaucracy and everything like that. And then overnight, things change. Mm. So you can imagine you probably were very apprehensive and you think as a business, should I spend that money? Should I invest? Should I hire more people? And you probably took a step back.
Mm.
So now 365 days later, right, you're feeling probably, huh, I know what to expect. I'm a little bit more confident. So I'm not so surprised by this data.
Mm-hmm.
But what is interesting is in terms of what the challenges are that these companies continue to face. And it's still going to be things like competition, right? They're uncertain about customer demand. And this exchange rate, which hasn't changed because the ringgit has continued to be quite volatile, even with the new government. We've had a range at the top of my head from 390 to 430, and now we're back to 414 against the US dollar. So businesses can be quite challenging, even in this new era of the 1 year after Pakatan in power.
And I think the other thing is that we are definitely seeing how much technology changes over the past couple of years. And I think businesses are starting to really acknowledge the fact that they really need to innovate in order to grow their businesses and in order to keep up with the rest of the rest of the world, essentially. And there are, the survey did highlight some of the things that businesses thought might be an impediment towards innovation. Most of them rated cost as the biggest impediment. So that was over half of the survey respondents. About a third of them also saw skill shortage as a problem because, and I think that's something that we've talked about as well, the fact that there are a lot of aspects to that conversation. One of them being that our graduates are coming out of universities not necessarily with the right skill sets in order to get themselves a job, essentially.
Yeah, so I mean, this is I guess it's not a new conversation. I think this is not a new issue, not a new subject. And I think it's not just being faced by Malaysia. Mm. A lot of countries face that as well with regards to getting, you know, the right match of employees and companies. It's never going to be easy. Again, companies have that role. I mean, they do have more firepower when it comes to dollar and cents. Again, it's just to look into things like, again, internal training, as in how the sort of training programs, development programs that could sort of provide a bridge for new graduates, for them to be able to acquire new skills. But, you know, as you mentioned, Xiaoning, there are a lot of indicators out there. For an example, for me, I always look at the KLCI and just looking at the stock market. Is it optimistic enough? Is there enough IPOs for people? You know, do they feel confident for them to invest, for them to, you know, to raise money so that they could focus on growth, for an example?
That's true. I mean, as much as we like to think that not everybody participates in the market, and that is a fact, but it does have this barometer sense of things. Mm-hmm. And the markets, if anything, are forward indicators versus, let's say, your numbers like GDP. That's a past indicator, right? That's a collection of data months ago. So whether you invest in the market, somehow when people look at the index and say, 1600, is that good, bad? And they see 1 year later, index is still 1600, they'll think, hey, have things changed? Not much, right? Because we always want the KLCI to be higher and higher.
All right. Well, let us know what you think. Are you feeling more optimistic compared to a year ago with regards to doing business? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're coming up on a couple of messages and then we'll take a look at social media after this. So be sure to stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Someday by Sugar Ray, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Shariat and Shaoning. Now, we've been having lots of interesting discussions this morning. We've talked about financial planning, we've talked about women representation on boards, as well as business optimism here in Malaysia. And thank you very much for weighing in on the conversation, because we've got a couple of WhatsApps from Stephen Chillier.
Yeah, he said, to me, financial planning is all about restraints on your needs. There's no textbook solution. It's about priorities over prerogatives, self-discipline, but sadly to the point of being left choiceless.
I don't know about this being left choiceless business. That seems a little bit
pessimistic.
Yeah, a little bit pessimistic to me. But yeah, I guess this is essentially it, right? It's restraint, it's moderation, it's about awareness of how much you're spending, because I think a lot of the times that's where people fall down, right? You don't you pay for things without even really remembering, without even really paying attention to how much that adds up to at the end of the day.
Yeah, so but I don't know, Stephen, about no textbook solution, though. I mean, there are definitely a lot of help out there. For an example, there's a lot of ideas of how you could financially plan. There's a money tree for kids and all those things. And there's a lot of books on financial planning as well. I guess it's hard. I guess where I'm coming from, it's hard to have discipline when you don't know what to do sometimes. So I guess it's good for us, you know, to be more financially literate. I think there should be a lot of education on this subject. On the other hand, we do have one more WhatsApp from Major Sebastian. To answer Sebastian, thanks so much. Yeah, agreed. Representation should reflect the population. Also, those men who are not in university and didn't make it to the workforce, where have they gone? So I guess we were speaking about the woman representation at the director level in the company. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for your WhatsApps this morning. Now, we're also going to be talking about the sugar tax later, a little bit later on. And we're running a poll this morning on the BFM Twitter. That's at BFM Radio. And we're asking you, will the sugar tax discourage you from drinking sugary drinks? So far, we've got about 70 votes and about 2 hours left on the poll. 41% have said yes, it will discourage them. 30% said no. 29% said maybe. We'll take a look. We'll continue taking a look at the results of the poll throughout the morning. So be sure to keep it here for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.